Welcome to Stories for the Ages. My name is John Schuster, and in this podcast, we explore the stories and possibilities for ripening and maturing and aging that are with us day in and day out in the many, many people who are living in the third or the fourth of their life. So one of our purposes in this podcast is that we hope to help you think and encounter life and yourself with more imagination and courage. And of course, to help you create some enjoyment and happiness and life satisfaction because of the angles and the ideas that come out in these many conversations. You're being invited into conversations that don't ordinarily happen, and I can tell you that from experience. When I talk to elders about being elders, they often have not wanted to talk about it or haven't had anybody to talk about it with, or maybe they're scared to. And the whole topic of being frank and upfront about what this means to get older is part of why this podcast is important. We're just not being out front with each other about what this is all about as we try to hide, and I'm afraid we hide from our own processes because we have such a youth-centered look at aging, which is part of the problem. So we're going to look at aging through the lens of aging and from our point of view, not from an earlier stage of life. It helps so much not to have a deficit sense of what this is all about, but instead to have a asset-based look at what the maturing process is all about. So if you expect a positive slant and a more resourceful look at what's possible here as we mature and ripen, that's the angle we'll take. Today we're going to look at this notion of how to have fun and what the freedom and the fun of these later years are about. And we'll look at two different 87-year-old men who have approached this possibility of fun in different ways. And the first one we'll take is Jack Knuth. And Jack is a person I worked with 30-some years ago, who's now, as I mentioned, 87. And he lives in Kansas City. And he was a manager of 7,000 people in a large manufacturing facility, and he was the best people manager I ever met. The most naturally motivating and the most naturally influencing leader I ever saw. And let's listen to him talk about how he approaches retirement and how he approached the notion of fun. And you'll hear him say things like, "I don't have a bucket list." But let's keep in mind that notion that when people do create a bucket list, it's often about the things they want to do that'll sparkle and make their spirits shine before their life is over. And Jack claims he didn't have one, but he did something fun anyway, and you'll hear about that. So, Jack, you jumped out of an airplane recently, is that true?
That's one of the things I was going to tell you, to stay active, fly an airplane every once in a while.
So,
yeah, I did that. I'm almost 88 years old, and I thought, you know, I better get that done, even though I don't have a bucket list. It was kind of a instantaneous reaction to an ad I saw. I said, well, I'll go down and check that out. And 2 weeks later, I was falling towards the earth at 125 miles an hour.
So. Oh, dear. Dear.
So I enjoyed that and the notoriety that has gone with it.
Right. How scary was it?
It wasn't scary at all to me. I have a very severe fear of heights. But when I was standing in the door of that airplane at 14,000 feet looking out, I had no sense of concern. If I had one, it was back in my mind, and that is, I hope the parachute works. But the thing that I thought might bother me, which was the the height had no effect on me whatsoever. And as you follow the first mile, all there is beautiful scenery and air rush. There was no sense of falling even. No real sense of loss and control of my body. It was just an enjoyable experience. But I was greatly pleased when the chute opened. So.
Good. Well, what did friends say and what did family say when you decided to jump out of a plane at age 87?
You know, that's interesting. I didn't tell anybody but my one friend that I was going to do this. And I knew that if I told Annabelle, I'd get, oh, no, you can't do it. If I told my daughter, I'd get the same thing. You can't do that. You're too old, blah, blah, blah. After I'd done it, they say, great, I'm glad you did that. Oh, I got the complete opposite reaction that I had expected.
Yeah, that's great.
I expected Lisa would chastise me for behaving badly.
Well, maybe if you would have told them ahead of time, they wouldn't have been so pleased. But since you did it and were there to talk about it, they said, hey, way to go.
Yeah, I just told my good friend Dick, and he went with me, and if I chickened out, he'd understand, and I wouldn't have to explain it to the rest of the world. But I didn't chicken out.
Great. So Jack, as you look back now on from your almost 88th birthday, I know that's coming up soon, any advice that you would give to people 10 years younger than you as you look back on your last 10 years?
Yeah. I don't know how good the advice would be, but I would tell them, don't isolate, you'll vegetate. Hey, that rhymes. Don't isolate, you'll vegetate. Hey, that sounds like a rap song.
It does.
Don't isolate. Stick with your friends and find new ones. I've had a lot of my friends pass away, and yet I'm still surrounded with friends. And I think those kinds of human involvement are important. Cherish your partner and find something that works your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's extremely important. That's what Spanish did for me. That's why I took it in the first place, is keep my mind active.
Good.
So that's about the only kind of advice I have for them. And try to enjoy what you have and try not to cherish what you've lost. And those words are a lot easier said than done, but I think they're important also.
So you'll hear in Jack's advice to those 10 years younger some great examples of what it is to keep the spirit young. I mentioned the bucket list, and then he tells his great story of jumping out of an airplane. And I want to point out that we're not recommending or suggesting that if you're 87 years old and you're not jumping out of airplanes, that that's a bad thing. And there's this thing called successful aging, and I had one person say, successful aging, I don't have to be successful at this age, do I? In other words, don't give me some standard. And the disability community apparently calls something that is inspirational, but which is not standard and therefore don't aspire to it, it's just the media has picked up on it. They call it inspiration porn, which is this great phrase for all pornography is a substitution for the real thing. So real aging is not jumping out of airplanes, but it is a great example of having fun. And so when the 105-year-old has just, created a new company and a new a new product, or when the 98-year-old has just water skied, or when the 93-year-old has just gotten her third PhD or something. Let's remember to be inspired by those great stories, but it's not meant to be some kind of standard. So let's go back and listen to Jack Knuth now talk about another important part of this view of life that allowed him to jump out of an airplane, and it's a sense of humor.
The one thing that I can't seem to give up, nor do I want to, is that I find humor in almost everything I do. And that aggravates a lot of people. But the sense of humor is something that's been with me all my life. I don't know why. I don't tend to give it up because I don't know how I do it in the first place. But I think it's absolutely essential for me.
Well, I've noticed that sense of humor my entire experience with you, which at times was pretty intense back when we were partners 25 years ago in the business. I call that a kind of lightness of being, where you can just see a little streak of possibility in there to laugh at, and away you go. So,
yeah. I had a boss once told me you have too much. I didn't change.
You kept it up, yeah.
Just kept it up.
Yeah. There's many ways to have fun, and this next gentleman we'll be interviewing for Stories for the Ages is a gentleman who took a very different tact towards his fun in the third of his life, and I'll be introducing him in a second, but there's the moment-to-moment sense of humor fun and the day-to-day kind of approach that Jack Knuth took to his retirement. He really didn't plan it, but here's a very planful story, very intentional. And this man had an early dream as far back as undergraduate school that when he was 60, he went back to school and he picked up a degree, and then he went on and had a 20-plus year encore career, and you'll listen to how he describes it. So my introduction today then is for Phil Meeks. He's a licensed counselor, and he's also a former engineer and former executive, and you'll hear him talk about his retirement. Phil has a very active retirement and has been a real force in the community that I'm a part of, One Learning Community I'm a part of here in Columbus, Ohio. Let's welcome Phil Meeks. What's this time of life mean for you, just being an 87-year-old? How would you talk
about? Well, I survived so far.
Yay.
That's something.
Yay.
Yeah, you know, you look at the obituaries every day, and most of the people are younger than I am. Mm-hmm. But anyway, actually, it's probably the best time of my life, John. It really, really is. I've been through some things. I lost my wife about 7 years ago. And that took an adjustment, but I'm finding that actually, in some ways, it was also kind of a gift because I got to really appreciate my solitude, appreciate being myself, and finding out really how introverted I was. As I'll probably explain to you sometime, I had a pretty extroverted career. And in this stage of my life, the introversion has bloomed, if you will, and feels good. I feel good.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's a great way to start. We probably should tell us a little bit about what that extroverted career was. And then when did you make that first career shift around age 60? Tell us about that transition.
Yeah, I have to start a little bit with I had a career with the Dow Chemical Company starting. I was an engineer at graduate, and went into technical service and then marketing and then kind of executive positions. When I was in my last phase of the Dow, I naturally started looking about what what I would like to do after I retired. I saw retirement coming up. I actually retired a couple of years early. And there was something in my life that has always been there. And I wondered if it would be a good time to finally do it. So that was a transition from the next phase, as you were talking about a little earlier, a second career, as I call it. But I don't see it as a commercial career or an economic career. It's more something I really wanted to do. It was a calling, I think, mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
So that was a transition.
Yeah. What did you do to make that transition, Phil?
Well, what I wanted to do, and it stems from a whole bunch of things in my life. We could go into more detail, but one of the things was when I was in engineering school, I had a choice of two electives, and I took one elective, which was psychology 101. And I really just fell in love with that. I thought, and even at that time, probably about a sophomore, junior in college, I just wondered, geez, is this the career I want in engineering or is it psychology and so on? But I was on the engineering path, so I, you know, mushed ahead. So that's always been in my back, my thought about, like to do that. So I, and there's a lot of other factors we can talk about, but obviously to do that, in this case, you can do a lot of other things, but in this case, you really have to get the education, you have to get the training, and you have to get a license, or you really can't do psychotherapy. I was coming to Columbus, and because of my wife lived here at the time, and she wasn't my wife at that time, mm-hmm. but I was coming in, and so I registered with the School of Social Work, and got a master's in social work, and I graduated. When I graduated, I was 61 years old, so it was a lot of fun. Actually, I really, really enjoyed it. It's a 2-year program for the master's degree, and because I was new here in Columbus, I decided, well, I think I'll stretch it out a little bit, make it 3 years, and won't have to. I can do other things in my life that need to be done, mm-hmm. and I took 3 years. When you get a license that you can practice in an environment under supervision, so you have to do a few more. I did about 5 more years in at the Dublin Counseling Center, where I was did my internships, and after 5 years or so, I got my independent license, and then I was able to set up a private practice in my home, which was my goal all along.
Great. So you've been doing your practice for
20 plus years. 20 yeah, plus years. Right. That's an independent, right?
That's a long run.
That's a long run for a second career,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
That's a great run. That's a great yeah. run. Yeah.
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 Well, that's been a good run, though, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, I know you through that second one. I don't know you through the executive piece, but that story you told about an unlived dream when you took that class in psychology. When I do these retirement preparation programs for couples, mm-hmm. we have them write down, what are your unlived dreams?
Mm-hmm.
And you
Good
should
idea.
See the things we see. We see, okay, I was going to be a rock star. I was going to be a, and they'll
right.
have, they'll have
right.
all kinds. I was going to sail a boat. I was going to, sure enough, at age 60, they all have the opportunity because of this particular program yeah. I do to go back and to capture some of those dreams,
yeah.
even if they don't live with them fully. So. It seems to be part of what the reclamation project is at this stage in life, is reclaim pieces of you that were latent. They were always there, able to be developed. You just didn't develop them because there were other contingencies and needs. And
oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you took a different path.
So, right,
yeah.
right. That sums it up pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were an extroverted executive for a while, and now you're a—
Very extroverted executive.
Yeah.
It was—that life is— people know are in large corporations, just very extroverted, particularly in marketing and sales and that kind of activity. So,
sure.
Yeah, I had an inkling that I was more introverted because it kind of wore me out and made me anxious, but I didn't really come to full realization until I was able to live alone, actually.
Yeah, until more recently.
Yeah,
even.
Right.
Yeah. There's this whole notion that as young people, we adapt to the culture. We create sometimes people call it a provisional personality. You improvise out of what you got to do. But as we ripen, we get the opportunity to put life more on our terms, not on the terms of society. And that's often one of the gifts of aging, is that you start to put life almost entirely on your terms instead of almost entirely on economic terms or other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that describes my venture into doing therapy very well. I didn't have to do therapy for economic reasons. I had a very good pension. I'm of the age when you still got a good pension.
Well, should I describe a pension to our younger
listeners? I think you have to. but I did. So I wasn't looking for economic reward from the therapy. And so that gave me so much more freedom. I was able to relate and deal with the clients in their needs. And as a result, I've done quite a bit of pro bono work.
Mm-hmm.
We worked out a fee that was, something they could handle.
Mm-hmm.
And in a big structured organization and so forth, you can't do that kind of thing.
Right.
So this made it special for me to be able to, concentrate on just doing the work rather than trying to make a living out of it.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to be able to do that.
So we've heard from two 87-year-old wise figures in my life who have talked about in their later years what they've done to have fun, to keep their spirits alive and well. And while they had very different approaches, they somehow found within themselves the capacity to stay on the brighter side, to manage the losses, to see the possibilities, and to make sure that they fed their souls through activities, through work, and through the day-to-day that made all the difference to them. This is John Schuster with Stories for the Ages. I want to thank our guests for their great words today. And I want to give special thanks to WOSU Public Media. This is a production of that group. To our manager, Tom Ryland, and to a great studio presence in Eric French, who's put our audio product together. Thanks again, listeners.